Welcome inside to the Inside Job. This episode is all about letting go, because we can be active and productive and acquire stuff and acquire and shop and shop and shop. But if we don't let go, then things get seriously toxic on all levels. And letting go is something that we're just not very good at. This is a soulful, sweet, meandering conversation in which we wander from winter all the way into spring, covering all kinds of letting go. As well as death, we talk about funerals, about loss, hope, the menstrual cycle and what that teaches us about letting go. We talk compost, menopause, grieving in COVID times, all the bestest of taboo topics. Lottie wears loads of different hats. They're a celebrant, a creator of queer-centered cycle magic, an educator and facilitator, a coast and animist, a walker between worlds, who's also worked in mainstream mental health for a long time. And I first came across them on Instagram, where you can find their heartfelt, thoughtful posts at Know Your Cycle. Hello, Lottie.
Hi.
Today we are very excited and celebratory because we're going to talk about death.
Yeah.
Which feels such a juicy topic. And I hear that you are training to be a celebrant. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. I will be qualified in March. Although technically, you don't have to be qualified to be a celebrant. Okay. I could do a ceremony now.
Hmm.
And there isn't like a huge amount of legislation, so.
Anyone
can do it, basically. But no, I'm underplaying it. Yeah, I've been training since last spring.
Mm.
And we'll be qualified hopefully in March if I actually do my
Wow. Hand. Well, congratulations. And what does that mean for you? I mean, how did you come to be to want to do this in your life?
Well, that's a big question. It's a good question though. Well, I'll try and give a potted version because it's a long story. Basically, I think the real catalyst for me to want to be a celebrant was that my brother died. He died just under 5 years ago. And I mean, aside from just it being an extremely shocking, pretty wild time, the turning point for me, or the kind of when I look back on how difficult and how awful that period was, his funeral was great. Mm. It was really magical. And I worked with the funeral celebrant quite closely, and so did my mum, and it kind of gave me this taste of like how deeply healing a funeral can be.
Mm.
You know, at a time when everything feels so shit, so out of control, a funeral can be this sight of just beauty and hope. And I had a right job trying to find a celebrant that I was happy with. I ended up speaking to loads of people on the phone, and that gave me a real insight into the industry and just to what people are like. There were like the people I spoke to who I could absolutely tell were just like, oh shit, this is a suicide. Okay, what do I say? Flick through my notes. Ah, this is what to say when it's a suicide. You know, like I could just hear how scripted it was.
Mm.
And then there were just people I spoke to on the phone who were amazing. The grace and the warmth and kindness that they offered me was that just beautiful. You know, I had that experience, kind of made me think, I would like to do this. But it took me, you know, it took me until now to feel at a point where I was ready to do the training. And I think the irony is that now I've done it, I'm like, oh man, there's so many things about the funeral industry that I'm really uncomfortable with and really unhappy about. And now I'm on that kind of precipice where I'm like, oh, am I going to do this, or am I, don't know, do I want to step into this?
It's like the difference between the, you know, when you think, oh, I shall train to be a ballerina, when I shall wear white and I shall flute, and the reality of, you know, 6 a.m. starts and swelling and injury, and it's like the real world nitty gritty of work is often a surprise, even though we're grown-ups and we know that.
Absolutely. And I did know this, but now I've kind of been faced with it. So what I'm imagining is that I will do some funerals. I will, you know, go and do some straight up ceremonies at the local crematoria. But I'd also really like to go more into activism and education around the industry, around death more generally. Because I think there's so much that needs reimagining in terms of funerals.
So what makes a good funeral? I mean, you spoke about your brothers. I don't know if you want to speak about that because it might be too tender.
No, I can speak about it, I think. And just, you know, like, I'm no expert on what makes a good funeral.
I'm interested in what you think.
I think for me, it's about hearing like more than one voice. So it's hearing different perspectives and different, like a kind of, it's almost like a good funeral, I think, for me, is like it builds a really beautiful patchwork of like, it's like a tapestry of like different warp and weft of like different threads of someone's life. And it doesn't necessarily tell the story of their life in a linear way. In fact, actually, those funerals that I've been to, you know, those funerals where it's just like, and they did this and they went here, and it's like just this kind of chronology. I would lean out of that kind of narrative. I think a good funeral, it has a sort of richness and different stories, different voices, different people coming forward and speaking and celebrating the person who's died. And I think good funerals center ritual. And give people an opportunity to really step out of the everyday and into almost kind of like a liminal space where they can be with the I'm trying to think for the word I'm going to say the word sacredness, but there's another word that I'm looking for. Sort of into like a kind of time beyond time, where we are momentarily connected to the broader cycles of life, right? Like, and that can be really meaningful and really profound, or it can be a 20-minute conveyor belt bonch, you know, like in and out job.
Lots of those.
Say that again.
I've been to lots of those.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
You spoke about hope.
Yeah, I think What I like to imagine about funerals is that they connect us back to our communities, and they remind us of the web of the web of who is still in our lives, who is, you know, is in this world with us. And I hopefully, ideally, and certainly, you know, at my brother's funeral, that was the case. Like it was something really just kind of hopeful and beautiful about everybody coming together, and there being, you know, some of my brother's friends there who I hadn't seen in years, and suddenly having a sense of the impact he had on people's lives, and the ways in which that his memory would scatter and go out into the world. I think that's kind of beautiful and hopeful, yeah, as well as the connecting to community.
Yeah. It makes me think, because we, you know, let's declare our interests here. We both have an interest in seasonal living.
We do indeed.
In various shapes and forms.
Get it out there.
And I would encourage people to follow your posts on Instagram, which are always very stimulating and interesting.
Oh, thank you.
You put your heart out, I feel.
Thank you for saying that. It's true. I do. I put a lot of myself out there when I write on stuff to do with the cycles, and particularly the menstrual cycle. I think very deeply about that stuff, and care about it a lot.
This, I can hear as you talk more about funerals and this celebration and the weaving and the coming together, I can feel more in my felt sense of a wintry feeling, and a sort of feeling of, I feel kind of, it feels slightly magic, that liminal sense. You know, we're talking more slowly, and it's kind of in between worlds. And in my seasonal framework, that feels like winter for me.
Yeah.
And the hope comes in with the sort of the shoots of spring, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a really tender time.
Yeah, it's a hugely vulnerable time.
So I wonder if you'd like to chat about or speak about, I'm getting very, very slow. Usually I'm rabbit face. This is very wintry. Speak about that place in the menstrual cycle, and hey, do you think we could learn about death through the menstrual cycle?
Hey.
Hey.
Funny you mentioned that. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think absolutely we can. I think, there's so much I could say about this. I mean, for one, I think isn't it interesting, the taboo and the stigma that surrounds blood, periods, menstruation. Sometimes that sort of taboo and awkwardness about talking about that stuff feels really similar to talking about death and the awkwardness that we have around grief and aging. You know, all of that stuff that we kind of, not us, not you and me, but you know, culturally, systemically, we shy away from. I think it's really fascinating. I think that's another reason why perhaps death and dying really interest me, is that it's another cycle. I've picked another juicy sort of taboo laden thing to
be. You're the kind of kid that always had to pick up the stones.
Yeah.
Name the elephant. I can imagine. You must have been a nightmare to your parents.
I was probably a pain.
Why is that lady crying?
Yes.
You smell of shit.
Bella, yeah, through and through.
Well, thank heavens for that, you know.
Yeah.
That's a sacred role in itself.
Tell my mum that. I'm sure she'd...
I will.
What were we saying? Death. Little... yes.
Little breaths. The taboo. You were talking about how the taboo around blood and menstruation is similar to the taboo around talking about death.
Mm. And I think what I notice and what I wonder about is how the opportunity that the menstrual cycle gives us to kind of move through those. I kind of think of like my blood, my period coming is like, it's like a little death.
Mm.
It's like this mini micro opportunity to let go of something.
Mm.
Some kind of, you know, often a facet of myself.
And do you pull that in consciously in your cycle?
Yeah, I do.
Do you bleed on it?
Yeah. Not every cycle. Mm. But I often find that happens.
Mm.
Well, often the pattern for me, more and more so actually, is that during my premenstrual phase, I become more acutely aware of the shit that I no longer need.
That's a universal.
Yeah, it's a real universal thing. And so calling it in is a really great terminology actually for this. It's like I really call in that the possibility of letting that go. Mm. And then ask my body, ask my blood to expel it, to let go of it.
And do you have rituals that you do around that?
Very occasionally,
mm.
I will. I will ritualize it more externally. so I might, you know. Quite a lot of folks do similar things to this, but I might collect my blood and then go and pour it somewhere, you know, but ritually dispose of it.
Mm.
And say some words and thank the earth or thank, you know, I actually end up working with my compost bin a lot.
Oh, I love compost.
I love compost too. Yeah.
I'm slightly obsessed. Anyway, we can talk about that later.
Yes, we could. I mean, compost is just brilliant, isn't it? What a paradoxical thing that both is death and life.
Yep.
All in one.
All at the bottom of the garden.
Yeah, bloody brilliant. No pun intended there. But yeah, so I will sometimes externalise these rituals by doing something, you know, pouring my blood somewhere, or I might, I might make a note, write things down that I want to let go of, leave them on my altar. But more and more so, I'm a parent, I'm extremely busy a lot of the time. I don't go hard on, like, you know, doing big ritual stuff. I just kind of think of my body as the altar.
Mm.
And just work with my body. And for years and years, right, I used to think that to do magic and to be magical and to kind of transmute and create change, which is, you know, what a lot of magical practice is essentially about, I used to think that you had to make lots of time to do it, and, you know, and that was the proper way to do this stuff. And in the last, I don't know, maybe it's just since becoming a parent, I've just realized that that's just setting myself up for failure. Like I have to find the most easeful way to do this stuff.
Fun. It's got to be fun, right?
Yeah, exactly. And 100%, like make it really fun.
Yeah.
Make it really, really doable.
Yeah.
I'm more and more interested in the menstrual cycle in particular as a kind of magical framework for change and for letting go. And
because speaking as someone who doesn't bleed and hasn't bled, you know, menstrual, if you cut me I haven't had a period for, you know, years and years, it's, I have to say, when I hear people complaining about their periods, I'm like, what are you on about? You've got magic every month. Oh, you know, and I have to kind of consciously generate that kind of release. In some sense, I think that once, if we're lucky enough to have some awareness of the possibilities of this menstrual cycle magic business, then actually on one level, maybe we don't have to do anything else because it's doing it for us, you know?
Exactly.
And they kind of, the taking time, and there's something about ceremony. And I used to, for years, I hated ritual because my parents went to the Protestant church. And so I thought ritual was talking in a very narrow, slightly nasal voice. But that's all bollocks.
Yeah.
It took me ages to find my own way of making meaning through gesture, I suppose. And you talk about it beautifully in terms of making magic and making change. But for me, it's like very grounded. Like, I want to make this meaningful, putting this stone there, whatever it is. Anyway, that was a bit of a sideline. I think that, you know, the cycles within us do it for us.
Yeah.
And some people are better at letting go than others. You know, some people are real clingers. Are you a clinger, or are you more like,
no, I'm a clinger.
You're a clinger. Ah.
Okay. I'm a clinger. I was gonna say is that I I struggle most cycles to let go and to drop and to surrender. It's a real wrestling act for me.
Mm. Do you block off time in your diary?
I would love to, but I have done in the past. Mm. Right now I don't. Mm. I'll be lucky if I get an hour, you know, to just sit and rest. But that's, you know, that's life, homeschooling, working from home in a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for blocking out time. If you can, I would really encourage people to do it. It can be super powerful.
Mm.
But yeah, not right now.
Yes, just when we most need it.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was just thinking about what you were saying and that feeling of frustration when folks are complaining about their periods and you're like, I feel sometimes like I have to be so cautious and careful and thoughtful about how I talk about this stuff, because I do recognize that for many, many, many people, their periods are crap. And when I'm there talking about the magic of bleeding and just the really kind of getting into the, for want of a better term, like the psycho-spiritual aspects of being a cyclical being, I know some people are just like, shut up.
Yeah.
What are you talking about, you weirdo?
Yeah.
And it's easy for me as well, you know, like I'm I'm using my words now, just I am very privileged to have a cycle that is regular. And that's kind of another consideration. I think it's it's easy for me to work this currently because my cycle is pretty regular. And if, for many folks, that's not the case. Mm. And then it's a different practice, isn't it? It is the same practice, but there's like another level layer to it.
Mm. Yeah. I see that a lot with people coming into perimenopause.
Mm.
Well, for the people who have, like you, who've had a regular cycle and been able to predict to some extent what's their energy levels and their state of being, it comes as a shock. And for the people who haven't been charting their cycles, it comes as a shock. Yeah, in a different sense. And either way, people are just catapulted into a void space, really, actually not knowing, in a space of really not knowing, and everything is up for grabs. Certainties are gone. And my great lesson from menopause process is learning to live with not knowing. And, you know, I'm not sure if we were recording at the time, but you said, well, I'm no expert about death. So, but I said, oh, you know, I'm just interested in you. Oh, I'm interested in what you think. You know, there's this thing about, ooh, we're going off on a tangent, things about experts, you know, that being in menopause takes the expert out of the equation because you know nothing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if you put that onto just before you bleed, maybe that you might be in the same kind of territory, or you know, around that kind of premenstrual menstruation crossover, or in seasonal terms, the end of autumn.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, I know for certain. There's one thing I know for certain is that I know shit all about anything.
It's so cool to hear you talk about this. Because I have been, it's been like the theme for this whole winter for me, has been that this unknowing, not knowing, sitting with uncertainty, you know, on a personal level. I feel like that's a lot of what's been going on for me. And I've also been thinking about it as you so beautifully described that moment in relation to that moment crossing from the premenstrual phase into menstruation. You know, there's that kind of moment of like fling it all up in the air, knows, kind of energy. So I feel slightly comforted imagining approaching perimenopause and menopause in that way.
Well, you already, I mean, the thing that I always tell people is that you already know how to do it because you do that every month.
Yeah. Yeah.
You already have the tools. It's just a bit scary, hairy sometimes.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm really grateful to be having this conversation and to know you and know that you know that terrain, because I am nervous about approaching it, even with all the practice and the kind of knowledge and education that I've had about this stuff. It's still, hey, like periods, like death, menopause is still this landscape that we just do not give enough time to explore. And there's no map, there's no compass, it's...
Well, there is.
Well, say that again.
It's seasonal.
It's seasonal. Yes, that's true, yeah.
There is a map.
Mm.
And it's not a linear map. But, you know, and let's acknowledge Alexandra here for her astonishing work. This is Alexandra Pope, who formulated this menstrual seasons, which also apply to life seasons. And it's all there, you know. So you're winning.
Woohoo!
Yay! Well, and I also wonder, what are you afraid of? You're afraid of it.
I think, what is it? It's twofold. Part of it is fearing a sense of regret that I didn't do enough with the cycling time that I had, which I know part of me is complete bullshit because I've done some pretty rad stuff with it so far. And then there's the fear of the sense of regret. And then there's also just the, I guess it's just what we've been talking about. It's like suddenly being plunged into this new terrain with this sense of not knowing and uncertainty when I have got so attuned to just working with this rhythm. You know, it's in my bones. It's in my body. It's in my womb. And to suddenly, well, not suddenly, but to then not have that, I think is going to be interesting. Mm. But of course there are other cycles to align with and work with. And
sound a bit sad. Yeah, of course. I suppose there are other cycles.
Seriously.
Make the best of it.
I will have to have a funeral for my cycle.
Well, I think that would be an excellent thing to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we're talking about deaths and endings and letting go, I think that in as much as, you know, your menstruation is a letting go, then the menopause process is too. And it requires a celebration to mark the passage from one way of being to another.
Yeah.
Which I happen to have in my compost heap, which is why I was so excited about your compost.
Oh, really?
I now can't remember quite what I did, but I had a lot of fun in the compost.
I remember.
What I did was I had, you know, like 30, 40 years of journals.
Yeah. You
know, of me, of my completely up myself, self-obsessive, moany stream of consciousness journals. And I burnt them. Actually, there were a few I took out. I took out early ones from when I was a teenager, and I took out ones when I met my partner, my current partner, and I took out the ones from when my kids were born. So I saved those, but because those are quite interesting. But the rest were like all this sort of self-obsessed moaning, and I burnt a lot of them, stuck them on the compost heap.
Yeah,
it was so much fun. And then of course, the compost went on the garden to nourish the flowers. Mm. It was really good.
I love that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Deep glee.
Well, let them go.
Yeah, that was good.
I think we do need those moments.
Mm.
We do need to facilitate those acts for ourselves and for each other. It's really helpful.
Mm. Yeah, really good. And of course, the compost always returns. And there is something about how can you, you know, in a funeral setting, how can you bring in real life, you know, because we're so sort of stuck with the sort of overculture of kind of, you know, how it should be. How do you bring in How do you bring in that stuff? I remember once I went to, it wasn't a funeral, it was a memorial, I think. It was more Quaker style. So people could just stand up, and I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the Quaker style. One of the things that really strikes me about contemporary funerals is lack of time. It's like, you know, like your average funeral at a crematorium is 30 minutes. And the next funeral after that is, there's like 10 minutes between ceremonies. So you've got half an hour and then you've got 10 minutes to get everybody out.
You get washed out.
Then they're getting
the broom.
Yeah.
I've been washed out.
Yeah. Like literally sweep them out. And then the next one happens. And so, I don't know, a big question for me is like, is half an hour enough to really get every, you know, honor a life and get everybody into that zone of, you know, that place? But that's what we, that's what we're offered quite a lot of the time at the moment. I mean, it's even in these times of COVID, most crematorium are offering even shorter ceremonies because the death rates have gone up so much across the UK. So I think on average at the moment, it's about max 20 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, there's some I could riff on this for ages, probably a conversation for another day, but there is a really interesting and worrying phenomena of many people right now not necessarily getting the ceremonies that they deserve and being able to grieve in perhaps as timely a way as they could have done pre-pandemic. Not just timely, I mean, you know, funerals are limited to 30 people in attendance at the moment. It might even be less right now.
So if under the sort of current, you know, as things are at the moment, time is limited and numbers are limited, how, if you can't properly grieve a life in the 20 minutes available, then what would you suggest that people do following that to process their grief?
One of the things that I hear people talking about more and more, and I don't know what the uptake on it is that it is to have the funeral and then plan to have like a longer memorial, maybe a week or so afterwards. Of course, at the moment, it's really hard to, right now, it's impossible for people to gather together. And I think that's really impacting on people's plans. I've heard of people doing, you know, doing the funeral, planning the memorial, cancelling the memorial because they can't do it. And it's sort of just getting, it's getting longed out to the point where then people are like, oh, it's just been so long ago. I don't know if I have any answers. I don't know if I have any real like strong suggestions. I think I'd really invite people not to give up on the possibility of having a really meaningful memorial or ceremony, even if it's ages after the event.
Yeah.
Because there can be something so powerful about a good ending and just tying up those loose threads. And I wonder if, I want to write about this more, but I wonder if there's also opportunities for folks to just craft their own mini ceremonies and just do really, you know, it's like, you know how ritual doesn't have to be, we just talked about ritual doesn't have to be complicated and take loads of time, but, you know, there's ways of marking these occasions that can really bestow meaning on them it can be really healing, but they don't have to be complicated.
Mm.
Writing a letter to your loved one who's gone, finding a poem that speaks to you about life, death, their passing, setting some time aside, you know, half an hour as it's getting dark one day, to light a candle and read the letter out loud and read the poem.
So if it's your next of kin or whatever, then you can ask people to write letters.
Yeah.
Remembering good times or remembering significant moments or something.
Yeah.
And kind of tie, bundle together.
If it's all up.
In person.
Yeah.
One thing I notice about funerals is every time I go to one, it brings up the grief from all the previous losses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it reminds me of what I've lost or and what I've had actually as well. So they can be more in, it's not just the person you're grieving at the moment. There's a bigger a bigger picture, and as you say, we're sort of, it brings us into that cycle.
Yeah, and I wonder if some of that way in which bring up the other losses in our lives is also sometimes down to the fact that, I don't know, we are, and I speak just of us in the UK, we're not great at grief, are we?
Shit.
We're not great at it.
No.
I'd love to see us all reimagining grieving and giving permission for grief. And you know, when my brother died, it was such a fierce initiation into what grief is really like. I just couldn't have been prepared for it. But it was fascinating, the ways in which people responded or didn't respond, and the expectations of, like, well, you know, you've had 2 weeks off, time to go back to work now. And
yeah, I think on a micro level, it would help if we just allowed ourselves to be sad more.
Oh my gosh.
And be okay with that.
Yeah.
Practice small. I'm always good. I'm always up for the start small.
I think that's
I feel sad, and my instant thought, my next thought is, what can I do to make myself happier? Well, maybe I could just be sad, and maybe that could be okay.
Absolutely. You're bang on. Yeah. Yeah.
And get into the sort of the texture of sadness and the you know, the depths and complexity and the variety and the, you know. But I still, you know, I know this shit, but I still move away from it like a pretty much as fast as my size 7 feet can manage.
It's always comforting to know other people do the same thing. Feel a bit of sadness. What can we do to make that go away?
Because you can feel interested in the sensations and the feelings.
Mm.
I know that I can feel pleased that I feel something rather than not, which can also happen, you know. Yeah. So have you thought about your funeral?
Oh, great question.
And the end of your life, and do you think about that? Do you have wishes or desires, or maybe it doesn't matter at all?
I am thinking about it all the time. if that doesn't sound too morbid, I don't. What I'm noticing is that for myself is that I do have wishes and I do have thoughts and feelings about my funeral and my end of life. And I definitely need and want to get better at sort of sharing those ideas with other people. So they're not just.
Yeah, you've got to tell them. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
Yeah, might need to actually tell them. I don't really have any. I don't have any like fixed. desires in terms of my funeral, I'm kind of waiting to see what happens within the industry, right? Like, you know, I think about how it would be beautiful to be buried somewhere beautiful. And then I also think about the
impact. You could be compost.
Yeah, I would love to be compost. And then I think about, you know, are there enough spaces? Is there enough land to do that? Is that the ethical decision? What's the right thing to do? Mm. And, you know, there's some really interesting methods of body disposal that are being developed and just need funeral directors and undertakers to get interested in and find and sort of shift the legislation around. I don't know if you've heard of Recompose. They're a group in, I think they're in Seattle. I could be wrong though. They're in the States, and they've developed a proper composting method for bodies. And they've built this really beautiful building where there are all these, they look like cells in a beehive, these kind of like hexagonal cells. And the body goes into one of the cells and with some microbes, and then is heated to a particular temperature that breaks the body down into compost within 30 days.
Oh God, that's so cool.
Super beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the family can then take the compost home if they would like to, or they can donate it. And Recompose have already kind of arranged, they've got partnerships where the compost can go to different locations. And I think I just saw a newsletter from them last week where they just done their first 10 funerals and composting acts.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I'd love to see something like that come to the UK. Mm. Really love that.
I'm into catchy composting. I'm sorry, get me off composting. I'm just getting out of talking about death. Just to be really in full disclosure, let's talk about the garden instead.
We're gone. I love bokashi.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
How do you know if your bokashi is ready? Because it looks the same.
To be honest, I think I don't know, basically. I just end up leaving mine for so long.
All right.
I'm like, surely it's done. Right, once, okay. I emptied my bokashi into
yeah, my orange has gone right up.
I know.
Let's talk about the compost first.
Talking about growing things. I emptied the bokashi into one of our beds, and it was gross, and it was like super sludgy and disgusting.
Oh.
This is gross. We had the best courgettes ever that year. The courgettes that grew in that patch. They were unbelievable.
Okay, just to say to people listening, bokashi is a kind of composting where instead of the food waste rotting, you ferment it with, you put some bran in that has some kind of special microbe and it's fermented. So you ferment your potato beans.
Yeah.
And it's the coolest thing. So have we reached spring now? Have we come full cycle?
I feel we have. In my own being, I feel like we have. Do you feel sort of...
I'm feeling a bit groovy. Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. Now, the bit that you really didn't want to do, do you have a tippiest top tip?
Okay. Don't
tell me to fuck off.
Hey, you know, I was saying to Kate just before this, that before we started recording, that I am really bad at top tips because I never feel like giving a top tip is enough or like giving a top tip works. And I'm not sure if I am going to give one. I'm sorry. But I think when I, working in mental health and in health promotion in particular, a lot of stuff is around giving people tools and techniques. And I was saying to Kate that I always used to drive all my colleagues mad by giving multiple caveats at the same time. So do this, but maybe do this as well. So now I've waffled now, and I'm sorry, I'm not sure if I have a top tip.
I'll let you.
Maybe like the thing that I would say, and I say this a lot, is just that, you know, just remember that we're all cyclical beings, and we're just, you know, living in this world that kind of wants us to be linear, and it's just good to remember that and let ourselves off the hook for all our kind of strange cyclical foibles. Not really a top tip, is it?
No, I think it is a top tip. Let yourself off the hook there. You see, you can't help yourself. God damn it!
You squeezed one out of me.
Yeah.
Oh, this has been great. Thank you. I've really enjoyed this. I do feel much more spring-like now. Mm. And I feel like your questions have really just reminded me how much I love this stuff. I've just been in my own little isolation, homeschool, pandemic bubble, not really talking to people, and can get a bit doubtful about what one is doing with one's life. But chatting to you, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this stuff. Really gets me going.
I think, as an observer, you have some shit going on.
What kind of shit?
Good shit.
Okay.
Not past.
Like bad shit.
No, good shit. Clearly good shit.
No, good. Good shit. I'm down with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Marty. I just love spending time with Lottie because we share this sort of broader picture of the menstrual cycle as a cycle that can be applied to all of our lives, whatever our gender or however we identify, that these cycles of activity and rest, of acquiring and letting go, just go on and on. Yeah, it's magic stuff. If you fancy joining the conversation about letting go, you can find me over on Instagram at Kate_Codrington, and I'd love to hear what helps you to let go. And Lottie is at know.your.cycle. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss the fascinating episodes I have coming up for you about activism in menopause, the hell that is perfectionism and how to avoid it, about fascia, about grief, about mindfulness and creativity, and much more. And I hope that life and inside job makes your inner life a great place to hang out.